MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynnBET.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home to the free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're also brought to you by Riffer. Riffer is your home for mini podcasts from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Subscribe to our Riffer channel today at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/RIFFR. And one more quick note for you guys. If you are listening to us right now on the SGPN main feed, we're not going to be here much longer. We actually have our own feed for the MMA Gambling Podcast, so make sure you head on over to that. You can check out the link in the show notes. When you get over there, make sure you subscribe to that so you don't miss an episode. So when we do disappear off of this feed, you still get us in your ears. And while you're there, make sure you also write us a nice little review. Give us 5 stars. We surely appreciate it. Now let's get to that episode.
And we're back in your degenerate ear holes. It's the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And I am your host, Jeff Fox. I write and edit for sportsgamblingpodcast.com and I run MMA-manifesto.com. And not only are we back for episode 30, but those mediocre boys are back again too, because we were very mediocre last weekend and neither of us are very happy about it. It's not just the royal us. There actually is someone else here. He's known as the host of the Top Turtle MMA podcast, the host of the Prelim Picker podcast, the associate host of this podcast. He's also known as Gumby, I think, because he's flexible with what time we record at. I think that's where the Gumby nickname came from, but maybe he can give us some backstory on that. This would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello, Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
The return of the mediocre boys, I have to say, is much lamented, and we'll get into some of the reasons why, but it is kind of a bummer to have that hot streak fizzle off in such a, not even like a fun way. Like it was like an absolute disgusting night of not so fun fights.
It was a split. We went down in a blaze of split decision glory. It was not very fun at all. So that basically ends. I had a 4-week hot streak and then I went 4-6 last weekend. So that ends that. Dan had a 5-week hot streak. He went 5-5. So typically that's the epitome of mediocre. So he beat me because of that damn guy who we're not supposed to be scared of his punching power. beat me and exactly what Dan said could happened, and Bartosz Fabinski, you are dead to me now.
Yeah, he was definitely a better puncher, definitely a better wrestler, definitely better at submissions, but it probably wouldn't matter because he would get caught in the submission anyway, and 2 minutes
in. And he got
himself
caught in submission. That was maybe the most angering part of the night. Also, there's a lot of bad split decisions that didn't go our way, so I'm thinking...
There's a split decision that went our way, though, too.
We
got a little bit of a bonus there, and it was, you know, not for anything. It was my lock, and I don't deserve to win it this week.
Exactly. So I'm so angry about us being robbed. I'm thinking of starting up, like, some kind of, like, grassroots movement to fight it back against this. I'm going to call it Stop the Steal. What do you think? Good idea?
I think that might have connotations that you're not looking for.
I already started a hashtag. Hashtag Stop the Steal.
Seems to be blowing up, man. Like I think
everyone who's behind us being robbed at UFC on whatever it was called, UFC
Vegas
on ESPN,
24.
UFC Fight Night, yes, Vegas 24. Everyone who's behind and supports us in losing our bets there. Please use the hashtag Stop the Steal, and we're gonna fight back against these crooked judges. So, yeah, it wasn't such a hot week. I'm down like $430 from it, and Dan's down $220 almost. So,
and you didn't talk about the biggest tragedy on there either, though.
that Dan's boyfriend won, but Dan picked against him. That's probably the biggest.
That's a big right? one, but also I think somebody lost their undefeated streak on
Oh, lock. Yes. My lock went down the tubes by Andre Arlovsky. Beat my lock. So let's do locks first. I'm 5-1. I'm still up 34%. Dan is 3-3 now. He's clawing back. He's down 18%. And then on the year, I'm hitting at a 54% rate with my picks, picking every fight and every card. Dan's hitting at 52%. So very mediocre. And we're both down money. So very, very mediocre. But it was pretty much a mediocre night for fights all around. As Dan alluded to, it wasn't a whole lot of excitement. Main event was good, but we had a whole lot. We had, what, two finishes last night out of 10 fights. But I think the main question, probably what we'll spend most of the podcast talking about, and the answer that most people want to hear about and hear Dan's opinion on, is what's next for Jake Paul?
So first of all, I'm very, very, very happy to say that while I did somewhat keep up on what was going on that on Twitter, I did not once try to find an illegal stream or consider paying for that monstrosity of an event. No. I actually don't know. Did Frank Mir get embarrassed as well?
Frank Mir lost via decision.
Oh, okay. Good for him.
Apparently he did okay.
To be fair, he was juiced to the gills again. Like, if you saw a picture of him at weigh-ins, he looked like he was about to fight Brock Lesnar for a fourth time or whatever.
Yeah, he's got he had the extended belly and all that fun stuff.
He looked big. But with that being said, yeah, I'm happy that I didn't look at any of that. I did keep up with it. I heard a lot about musical performances, and Oscar De La Hoya probably messed up on cocaine. It seemed like altogether just an absolute train wreck circus spectacle, which, I mean, I think is the target demographic of that, right? Like the person who was turning into that was looking for something stupid, and they found it. You know, I did see a gif of Askren being knocked down and getting back up. And, like, you know, I'm not a super big boxing fan. I don't watch tons of boxing. But, like, you had to know a guy who's been training in boxing versus a guy who got outboxed by Demian Maia. What, right? Demian Maia outboxed Ben Askren when he was – and that's when he was training full-time and taking things crazy serious. Now you're telling me he's going to get $500,000, win or lose, and is never going to box again after this, doesn't need to put in any effort to that, isn't going to make any more to win, like – yeah, am I surprised that he lost to a guy who's younger than him and in better shape than him and trying as hard as he can to make I don't want to call it a legitimate boxing career, but that guy thinks it is, and he's got the name value behind him. So if he's putting in that much effort, he's putting in more effort than Ben Askren. So I kind of thought that was what was going to happen. I guess it's sad that it happens because, you know, you don't like to see a washed up star just take a paycheck for the paycheck to get punched in the head once or twice. But I don't know what's next for a YouTube star. Fighting another YouTube star, fighting somebody other. What, I mean, he's fought a basketball player and a bad MMA boxer. Let's try, you know, who plays football and is recently retired, you know, like somebody like that.
Yep. No, it was just an annoyance that it was clogging up my feeds with blocking out my legitimate serious face punching news this very serious sport that we follow. This circus was clogging it up, and it was annoying that Dan actually seriously talked about it there for what, 2 minutes? That's like far too long to give this, but it's not annoying that it's bringing traffic into MMA Manifesto, because it actually is. Ben Askren and Frank Mir are bringing in traffic, so that's the one silver lining we'll say of this. But yeah, it seems like it definitely had linking into this card. It had a lot more interest than this fight card on ESPN did last night. Even amongst the actual MMA media, seemed to be paying a lot more attention to that spectacle than they were to the actual sport that they cover, it seems.
Yeah, and that seems sad, but, like, you know, you mentioned a whole bunch of traffic to Manifesto because of that. There's a reason for it. Like, it's a spectacle, and you know, you can't blame media for covering the thing that people want to read about, you know?
No.
And if that's true. What you decided to bog your Twitter feed down with, which I didn't, just because, like, you know, it was getting hits and people were covering it, but people are going to cover it better than me because I couldn't have cared less.
Yes. Yeah, I was getting the secondary hits, just the Ben Askren and Frank Mir MMA hits. Basically, I did no coverage whatsoever of the event. Just everyone knows I am a legitimate journalist. I'm serious about this. I will not cover these spectacles, but maybe next time I will. It seemed to bring in a lot of interest, but and then maybe I can make some money and bring it over to WinBet and make some money there. So we'll segue into our ad read to remind you that WinBet is helping bring the podcast to you today. And they're also bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Win Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WinBet. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com. Download the app today. They have lots of lovely lines and whatnot there that I can't look at because I'm in Canada, but they have good stuff. All right, let's get this monstrosity of an event last night out of the way and look forward to next weekend's massive card. So main event was very good. That was one of the fights that you can actually say was very good. It won fight of the night, despite it being a 5-2 shutout. You don't see that too often. Can't really argue on it winning fight of the night either. It was not an exciting night of fights, to say the least, and that one was the best of the bunch. Robert Whittaker beat Calvin Gastelum, shut him out, as I said. I think the argument could be made that he could be the best fighter in the UFC that doesn't currently have a title belt around his waist, because he looked fantastic last night and he seems to still be evolving and growing his game. And as for Gastelum, he was tough as nails and hung in there, but he really had no chance whatsoever in that fight.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that one. And we sort of said that on the onset, right? Like, what is, you know, I asked the question, what is Calvin Gastelum good at, right? What is the thing that makes Calvin Gastelum Calvin Gastelum? And it's just like, he's kind of good at wrestling and he's kind of fast and he does kind of good work in the clinch. And all of those things Robert Whittaker does better. And he just reminded us all that that's a thing that Robert Whittaker does better. You know, like he does Calvin Gastelum better than Calvin Gastelum does Calvin Gastelum. So
right.
You know, for that reason, yeah, I kind of saw this coming. I was impressed in how many punches that Calvin Gastelum took, because I actually thought he was going to be rocked and finished a couple of times in there, and he wasn't. So props to him on that. But you know, I don't know that there's much to say. It was a 5-round beatdown exactly the way we predicted a 5-round beatdown.
Great. He doesn't have much to say about it. Fantastic. How much longer do we have to go here? 45 minutes or so?
But I think about it though. Like what in that fight like stood out to you and being like, man, that's evolved, or man, that's different, or man, that wasn't quite like we thought. Like everything was what we thought, right? Like Robert Whittaker is really freaking good, right? Like he's so damn good. He continues to be so damn good. And anybody entertaining a title shot for anybody other than Robert Whittaker at this point in time is crazy, right? Like, look at the recent run of people that he's beat, and not just beat, but soundly beat, right? Because, you know, we're coming off of him losing to Adesanya. Nobody wants to see him fight again against Adesanya. He comes out and he whips Darren Till. He beats the hell out of Jared Cannonier, and he shuts Calvin Gastelum out. Like, anybody sitting there thinking to themselves like, oh, Marvin Vettori did just wrestle Kevin Holland for 25 minutes, or Derek Brunson wrestled him for 25 minutes the week before. Either of those would be good. No, they're not. Like, and the same with Paulo Costa being on the shelf, same with Darren Till having a broken collarbone. All four of those guys are contenders and right behind Robert Whittaker, but it's like a big gap. It's Israel Adesanya, little gap, Robert Whittaker, huge gap, everybody else. And like for that reason, like I mean, it was a really fun match to watch, but also there was no suspense. Like at no point were you like, ooh, is this Calvin's opening? I mean, unless you counted the 4 seconds of top control he had after one takedown You know, like it just there was nothing big that came out of that fight other than Robert Whittaker is who we said he was.
Yeah, which actually is a fairly big thing, because you don't hardly ever do you see a person after they lose the belt actually seem to improve and charge back for another shot at the title. You see people get rematches and you see former champs get title shots mostly because they are former champs, but he's actually gone out and earned it and seems to be evolving, or at least patching up some potential holes that he had. The only basically path to victory clear from the get-go for Gassum was landing a big shot, knocking Whittaker out, which only one person has done so far. That's Israel Adesanya. I guess Stephen Thompson did, but that was like, what, 7 years ago?
Yeah, and at a different weight class too.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's he had no chance in there, and that doesn't diminish what Whittaker did. Whittaker picked him apart, and he's clearly the next. He should be given the next title shot, at least on merit, but that's not how it always goes in this quote unquote sport. Do you like his chances at all in the rematch? Or I usually just go with whatever happened in the first fight. It's probably going to happen again in the second fight.
Yeah.
Same person's going to win.
I mean, the thing for me is that, like, nothing has changed, right? Like, you right. know, it's kind of like I just said about Whittaker. That's part of the reason why this wasn't all that fun of a domination for me, is because, like, it's not like we were like, ooh, look, Robert Whittaker added insert technique here. You know, like he added a really good double leg, or he added calf kicks, or he added this cool move he's doing out of the clinch, or a trip, or this or that. He didn't add anything. You know, like you said, he's shoring up some holes. Yeah, I mean, like he looks a little bit sharper striking, but like also you're gonna look sharper striking against Calvin Gastelum than you do against Israel Adesanya. You know, that's just a fact. He's less dangerous, he's slower, and he's got less reach. So, of course, you're going to look sharper striking against him. So, I don't think I do like him in a rematch, just because, you know, like I said, it doesn't seem like anything's changed. So, if nothing's changed, yeah, you go with the guy who won the first one. And you know, I think the line will probably be closer, you know, for the gens out there trying to jump on the line early, because Israel Adesanya was seemingly exposed by his takedown defense. But like, do you see Robert Whittaker being the type of guy to expose that further? I mean, like he's not Jan Blankovic sized. He's coming up from 170 in his career. And so yeah, I just think, you know, more of the same. Watch Israel Adesanya style on him until he decides to knock him out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like I said, the one takeaway is that that Robert Whittaker is still good. His game may not have changed, but the fact that he's still good, I think, is a revelation in itself, because that's not a given, especially after getting knocked out. As for Mr. Gastelum, that's his, what, fourth loss in his past five fights. He's got three wins in his past, what, eight? Hopefully he gets slid down a bit and can fight like more of the Ian Heinisches of the world, because hasn't proven that he's at the top of the food chain in the middleweight division. He lost to Weidman, Adesanya, Till, Hermanson, Whittaker during that span, and he's beaten Heinisch, Souza, and Bisping. So
in a washed Souza and Bisping too, like
right.
a very washed version of both of them. So
yes.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get moved down and fight somebody like Omari Akhmedov or Sean Strickland, or, you know, originally I'd said Edmund Shabazian wouldn't be a bad pick, but Edmund Shabazian just got gifted a fight with Jack Hermanson, which is super fun and good for him for getting the big step up. But somebody in that, like, edge of the top 15, because, like, yeah, Gastelum needs to be fighting Ian Heinisch or has looked bad otherwise, so,
yeah.
Not fun.
No. Co-main event wasn't fun either, but I'm sure Dan was cheering inside even though he picked against him. This guy's definitely not washed yet. Andre Arlovsky won a 2-1 over Chase Sherman. He's basically, they keep feeding him these guys that he's basically the gatekeeper of the heavyweight division, or the top part of the heavyweight division. And they keep feeding him these younger, unproven guys, or kind of mediocre. It's not like Chase Sherman's a world beater. He's like, what, 3-6, I think, now in the UFC for his career. But they keep feeding him and the Tom Aspinalls and the Tanner Bozers of the world. And more often than not, he sets them down with a very technical, safe performance. And that's what he did again last night.
Yeah, although I will say in this one, you know, one of the reasons I picked against Arlovsky for the first time in 10 years was he was forced to fight a fight that was less safe, right? Like, I was thinking that Chase Sherman was going to get in his face and force him to throw, and to an extent he did, right? Like, Chase Sherman made Andrei Arlovsky throw more, but Sherman never landed a big enough blow to, like, deter Arlovsky. Or to stun him or anything like that. So Arlovsky, I think for the first time in probably 6 or 7 fights, mixed a little bit of that power and recklessness with his good defensive boxing that he's sort of developed over the last, you know, few years in working with Mike Brown. So I thought it was a great performance by Arlovsky, one of his best ones recently. You said he's on the edge of the top 15 and kind of gatekeeping it. I think, you know, I was trying to look at the list of names and whether or not you could come up with 15 names better than Andrei Arlovsky right now to rank. And it's not easy to come up with 15 guys you think would beat Arlovsky in that division now, especially now that they've released, you know, Junior Dos Santos and they've released Alistair Overeem. Like, it is a really hard time trying to keep this dude out of, like, the edge of the top 15.
Yeah, he's just keeps winning. That's what, 3 of his last 4.
And against good guys, Tanner Bozer is not bad. Felipe Lins is not bad. You know, Chase Sherman just absolutely blasted Ike Villanueva in his last fight. So, like, they're 3 guys who, you know, they weren't feeding them guys who were getting ready to get fired. They were feeding them guys who they thought, hey, this guy could be a top 15 guy next. And then he was like, no, not yet.
Yeah, no doubt. So what do you see next for him?
Whew, man,
who's the next young guy they're going to feed to him now?
That's a good question.
Young being relative speaking, because he's, what, 42 or something.
So, yeah.
Everyone's young, but still.
And it's the heavyweight division, and we'll talk about Alexander Romanov, too, but I was touting him as, like, the next young up-and-coming heavyweight, and I was like, oh, how young is he? And I like, looked him up, and he's, like, 31 or something like that. And I was
exactly.
Heavyweight young, man. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I mean, I guess there are a bunch of names that you could probably throw out there that are sort of edge top 15 guys, you know, like, I mean, like, Parker Porter, you know, pulled out of that fight with Chase Sherman. He was 1-1 in the UFC. You know, he's kind of a name that might pop up sort of close to there. Sergey Spivak, you know, I mean, Greg Hardy just got booked with Tai Tuivasa, but somebody like Greg Hardy, you know, like, there's a bunch of guys kind of right there on the edge. And I don't think any of those guys I mentioned are young, but I don't think anybody in this whole division is young. You could throw them against a perennial chunky guy, Jake Collier. You know, like, any of those guys are kind of fun to watch. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, just one of those guys, and maybe somebody else pops up soon. But you could also just start throwing them in fun fights with guys who've had a ton of experience. Like, Alexei Oleinik and him is a fight that I've been asking for a while now, since they both started fighting while I was still in elementary school. You could put him against Alexander Gustafsson if he's not actually retired and is going to still fight at heavyweight. That'd be fun. I mean, just let Andrei Arlovsky have fun. The guy says he's going to fight for 3 more years, so he's already fought 100 times and he's 42 years old. Let him fight whoever he wants, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's true. And yeah, he was a surprise addition here, especially since he's, as far as I know, still fairly high paid. I'm surprised that they slotted him in here on short notice, but yeah, he didn't disappoint, that's for sure. Actually, bearing with the big leads here, the real co-main event was supposed to be Jeremy Stephens versus Jarkar Close. And Close got, what, a concussion and whiplash from Stephens attacking him at weigh-in. So I don't see much condemnation for Stevens. I haven't heard anything from the UFC condemning this. It's all I hear is Close is faking, and he's probably quote unquote scared to fight Stevens. And that's what happened there.
So I'll say two things. I actually think both of those things are wrong. I don't think Stevens really needs to be condemned. He shoved him. How many times have we seen a shove at weigh-ins? 850 million times. He didn't tackle him off the stage like John Jones in DC. So let's start there. I think the shove is probably out of line, but if you're not going to punish the 38 million people who have shoved somebody at weigh-ins before, you're not gonna discipline Jeremy Stephens. So I actually don't think you need that. I also don't think Drakkar Klose is faking, and I don't think 100% the shove is probably what did all of that. I have to imagine the guy probably had some sort of pre-existing issue from training, whether he knew it or not. You know, like he could have done something to, you know, a disc in his neck or something like that leading into the fight and just not known how bad it was. Because he said he got shoved and instantly all down his arm was tingly. And so, like, it's either he had a pre-existing injury or that weight cut took a lot out of him. One of those two things. And it could have been both. But if you look at him when he does get shoved, he's instantly wobbly. Like, look at him. If you go back and watch the clip of him getting pushed, because it was posted everywhere after that, you can see, like, the couple of steps he takes back towards Stevens, he looks bad. Like, he doesn't look good. So I don't think he was faking it. I think totally the reason he pulled out was meaningful and it made sense. But also, I don't think it's entirely Jeremy Stevens' fault, right? Like, I think shoving him at weigh-ins is kind of stupid and childish and whatever. But, like, you know, like it's happened 100 times. I don't think he needs to be punished or needs to be talked to or, you know, needs to be cut for this. I think those kind of calls are super premature. But I do think whatever happened when he shoved him was probably the result of something that already existed.
Right. Just lucky he didn't do that to Conor McGregor. He would be looking for other work.
That's the bigger thing here, too, right? It's like if Drakkar Klose was a guy who was getting ready to make, you know, if this was a pay-per-view and it was a co-main event and everybody was like chomping at the bits to see Drakkar Klose versus Jeremy Stephens and this ruined buys, yeah, he might have been fired. You know, like we've seen, you know, altercations, you know, around the bell or before the bell. You know, like, think about Paul Daly on that pay-per-view where he punched Josh Koscheck. You know, like, he instantly got fired, and part of it was because it looked bad on pay-per-view, and they were worried it was going to hurt buys. It wasn't just that it was illegal, right? So in order for the UFC to cut somebody following something like this, it's got to be both egregious, illegal, and it's got to hurt their bottom line. And I think this one is just one of those three. It's illegal. You shouldn't be pushing people at weigh-ins, but it's not super egregious because people do this kind of crap all the time. And it didn't hurt their bottom line, right? Like this card did exactly as well as it was going to, opposite of a freak show boxing card on ESPN Plus / ESPN. It was on both of them, I think, but on ESPN Plus and, you know, like headlined by a couple of middleweights who probably don't move the needle all that much in the first place.
No. And Jeremy Stephens has some kind of dirt on Dana White, that it seems, because Dana White's always gone to bat for him over the years for some reason.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And he doesn't have a great UFC record, right? Like,
no, he's got a losing record, I think, when we were breaking down the fight. I think he had a losing record when we were 14-16 or something.
Yeah, 13-15. But to be fair, 13-15 or whatever that number was, with like losses to like prime Anthony Pettis, prime Doubt Cowboy Cerrone, Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, like Zabit Magomedsharipov, Jose Aldo, Calvin Kattar. Like, he's lost to just absolute beasts the whole time. So maybe that's it, that he's willing to fight all of these beasts and like give just an – like, he's got a ton of bonuses too, I assume, right? He's probably wins fight of the night all the time because he just goes out on his shield when he goes out. So yeah, I imagine maybe not dirt on Dana White, but he appreciates the crazy fights at least.
Yes, no doubt. And best part is Klose probably didn't get paid anything either for the work this past week, because that's the way it works in the UFC.
Or so he got like 20% of his paycheck.
And exactly.
Like, we took care of Drakkar Klose. Exactly. Oh, you took care of him, all right.
yeah, after you let him get injured injured before the fight even starts. So anyhow, moving on. It's actually, before we move on, let's tell you about BetterThan.Vegas. BetterThan.Vegas is like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which of course is sports betting. And us good people over at SGP, Sports Gambling Podcast, are giving out free daily video picks over on our Better Than Vegas profile page. Better Than Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well, and they have a bunch of free picks and handicappers for you to check out. Make sure to subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, and check out the Top Turtle one also. Dan, I see it's been you doing it. As your luchador friend, it's sticking you with doing the videos?
My luchador friend has been slacking and sticking me with the videos a little bit, but I will say... I do have to give a little leeway to co-hosts who stick the lead host with all the problems, because it turns out being an associate host, it is easier to just stick that on somebody else.
There you go. There you go. But Dan is very, very photogenic, so I prefer watching Dan do these picks, let me tell you, and I'm going to start making him do ours, because I look like I lost 50-45 in the game of life, and Dan... Does not, that's for sure. All right, moving on. Another fight that we lost, middleweights. Jacob Malkoon wrestled Abdul Razak Al Hassan. I don't know, not much to say. He beat him 3-0 via wrestling, which is what Al Hassan's weakness is.
Yeah, the crazy thing to me here, and maybe I should have just trusted old me better, but if you go back and listen to me break down, I don't even remember if we were even doing this show yet. It might have been on the prelim primer instead. But when I broke down Jacob Malkoon in his debut fighting Phil Hawes, I talked so much about how I loved his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu, and he's an Abu Dhabi qualifier. He didn't wind up going to Abu Dhabi's, but because he had an MMA fight come up and he decided it was more important to get back in the cage because that's his ultimate goal. He found out later he would have been bracketed against Gordon Ryan in the first fight, which would have definitely not been worth the flight to Abu Dhabi. But, like, he's a really good grappler, like one of the best out of Australia as a result. So, you know, given all of that, I was so high up on him against Phil Hawes, and I was like, he's just going to tire Phil Hawes out with his wrestling and stuff. And then he got tagged 18 seconds in, and for some reason I was like, oh, he can't take a punch. Not, oh, Phil Hawes hits hard, or not, oh, Phil Hawes is good, or not, like, I was just like, oh, he can't take a punch, and his boxing's not that good. And then I forgot, like, if he just doesn't take that punch, I did think he was going to win the fight, and I don't think that changes still. And then he fought, like, what, a more tired old version of Phil Hawes, right? Because that's what Al Hassan is at this point. Like, sadly, the dude had a really great-looking prime of his career. He had those, you know, years away. He came off of knocking out Nico Price. And then he was away for 2 years, and then suddenly he looks slower and worse and bad, and Jacob Malkoon is the type of guy who can wrestle and beat that. So, yeah, I don't know why I wrote him off after an 18-second knockout loss. I feel like that was oversight on my part, but he seems like a guy I'm excited to see fight again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know why I wrote him off. He's coming off a knockout loss against a guy who has 10 wins all via knockout. So, you know, pretty simple there. That could be the end of Al Hassan too. That's three straight losses. He hasn't won in three years either. Nope. Yep. So Malkoon did exactly what he should have done to win the fight, and he won the fight. Tracy Cortez, speaking of missing weight, she missed weight by what, half a pound technically, given the 1 pound leeway that they're given. But she eked out a split. She went against our stats that say if you miss weight, you have a good chance of losing. But she eked out a split decision over Justine Kish. This was one split decision, or actually two split decisions went our way. But this is one of the ones that went our way. I don't see how one judge could give Cortez three rounds and another judge watching the exact same fight could give her one round. I don't see how that, I understand how split decisions happen, but I don't see how, like, we've seen this happen before too, where one judge gives a fighter all three rounds and the other judge gives a fighter only one round. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I agree that this doesn't make sense. I will say, if you look at MMA decisions, which I've used pretty extensively over the last day after all these split decisions.
Yes, I'm on it currently.
There was a lot of media members who gave this fight to Kish. I would say the more egregious one in this case is the 30-27, right? Like I think Kish pretty clearly won round two, in my opinion. Like I think one was Cortez for me, pretty standard. Two was Kish, and for me three was pretty clearly Cortez too, right? Like I had it one and three were clearly Cortez, two was clearly Kish, and I thought 29-28 was pretty obvious. But there's enough people who thought Kish won that third round. You know, like if you look, it's like 50-50. There is only one media member who did think the second round went to Cortez. But ultimately, I think if you're talking about somebody who had an egregious score here, the 30-27 was actually much worse.
Yeah. No, yeah, like I said, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense having one.
But Cortez looked good at flyweight. Apart from the judges, which, like, the judges are going to overscore our discussion here for pretty much this entire card. But, like, apart from the judges on this one, Cortez looked good coming down. She was, like I said all along, somebody who I think should have been at flyweight to start. Like, I don't think she needed those fights at bantamweight. Obviously, the weight cut didn't go super well, which we were a little worried about before. Maybe she bulked up. Maybe she wasn't used to cutting weight. And that kind of showed through. But I think, you know, given another opportunity to come in here at flyweight next, you know, it was half a pound. Like, I think she'll probably make it next time and be back on track. It's just kind of like she didn't have to make that weight for a really long time and didn't. But she looked good there. I thought that was a good performance on her part.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, and this was her first time cutting down here, so hopefully it was a one-time issue with getting down to the 126 pounds. Next match, another split decision. Actually, this fight went exactly the way we expected it to go. Luis Peña we're speaking of, and Alexander Munoz. Munoz took him down numerous times. Peña got back up numerous times, which is what we expected. Peña looked decent striking from distance. Munoz had power punching. You know, it was actually a pretty decent fight. But hashtag stop the steal, guys. We lost this one via split decision. MMA decisions, media are siding with us and Munoz. A small minority had Peña win the fight. I thought Munoz won fights that you have an interest in, and I'd score them fairly, I think. But I thought Munoz did enough to win myself.
I actually think I scored it in real time for Peña.
Okay.
And I did want Munoz to win. I did pick Munoz to win. He was a plus money underdog that we had. But yeah, like I think what we thought was correct. You're 100% right. We broke that fight down to a T. Munoz is going to take him down. Peña's great at getting up. Munoz is going to take him down again. Peña's going to get up. I just think Munoz didn't have enough actual control on the mat. Like, I thought he was going to be able to control him and land some stuff on the floor. And apart from that first round, he really didn't. You know, like the second round, it started to fade a little bit. And I thought it faded enough that what Peña did on the feet was probably enough to win him the second. And then in the third, it was clear to Peña. So, you know, it's one of those fights that comes down to one round, how you judge that second round. I think while I was watching, I said that they were 1-1 going into the third, and then Peña clearly won, and I was like, maybe the second went to Munoz, kind of hopefully.
You're right.
But I think that's a Peña fight, and that's what you're going to get every single time out of Luis Peña, too. That's the craziest thing, right? His grappling numbers probably went down in that fight, and he picks up another win, so...
Yeah.
Just a weird thing overall, but ultimately, again, kind of dumb split decision. Didn't teach us anything about either fighter.
No.
Not particularly excited to see either of them fight again.
Which brings us to our next fight, which is the one we were looking forward to the most.
The weirdest fight on the card.
Yeah, I think I saw Ben Cartledge, which who is I believe he's over in the UK or maybe even Ireland, which is the UK, I guess. He's a judge over there, and he said 2,000 fights he's been involved in. He's only seen one go this route, which was a technical decision. Our chunky boy Alexander Romanov got kneed really hard somewhere where you don't want to get kneed. by Juan Espino at minute five into the third round and could not continue. He was not faking, as people love to say people are faking all the time. He couldn't straighten his leg or get up, and this is a big, tough Russian dude, so he wasn't faking.
Moldovan.
That's true. Oh, how dare I?
I feel like people have gotten in trouble recently just assuming everybody's Russian. Exactly. I don't know if you followed the Patty Pimblett string of messages.
No,
where he called everybody in Georgia fake Russians. And you know, there's some pretty serious stuff happening, for those of you who don't know, between Russia and Georgia on a geopolitical stand. So you don't want to call Georgians fake Russians. So I just want to clarify, Moldova, not Russia.
Right. Atlanta is Georgia though, right?
Atlanta is Georgia. And same with Gwinnett and Cobb County.
Exactly.
I can say a bunch of places that are in Georgia.
Atlanta Braves fan talking to our associate co-host. So anyhow,
Danda.
That was so they pretty clearly our chunky boys pretty clearly split the first two rounds. It was a nice chunky grappling fight with some nice striking. And then basically, like I said, low blow, put down our Moldovan friend for good. And basically what happens is everyone's claiming the UFC is making up these rules on the fly, but the UFC doesn't make up the rules. It's the governing Las Vegas commission, and these rules are in place before the fight. So basically, since they went past two rounds, I think it is, then the fight goes to a decision, and the judges have to pick who won that third round based on the minute of action. Juan Espino clearly won that minute of action, but Romanov was given the decision regardless. So maybe that was some cosmic justice. Because, like I said, I'm pretty sure based on those rules, Espino won 2-1, but the judges did not think so. And we got a split decision that went on our side, so we're not going to stop this deal.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to tell you, too, have you seen the judges' scorecards on this fight?
Wait a minute.
Two judges gave Romanov rounds 1 and 2. Nobody gave him round 3.
That's right. Wait a minute.
Which is
so
I'm looking at it
right now.
Wild.
Yeah, that's even crazier.
The only judge who gave Espino a round in there in the first two was the very famous Chris Lee, who's notoriously bad at judging fights. And I had it 1-1, because in that first round when Espino had full mount and seemed to be landing, you know, damaging shots, Romanov controlled the first round for a higher percentage of the time. But I thought, the more damage was done by Espino and the better positions were held by Espino. So I gave the first round to Espino as well. Romanov clearly wins the second. And then, that third in the, whatever it was, 64 seconds we saw or whatever, I mean, Espino had the only offense and then landed the knee to the groin. So being that the ref didn't take a point away for the knee to the groin, I thought for sure it was 29-28 Espino. At the very worst, 29-29 if the judges decided that there was no offense in the third round. But even that I thought was kind of a long shot. But, those judges' scorecards, remember, they give them in between rounds. So they had already given Romanov two rounds. It was wild to me that Romanov didn't continue, because, I don't think he was faking it, but, I don't think I've ever seen a groin shot like that was, just a short knee that debilitated somebody so much. I don't know how it hit him or how flush it hit him or where his cup was moving, and to be honest, I don't want to. But, I thought it surprised me that he wasn't going to continue. I wondered how much exhaustion also added to his ability to recover, right? Because he was clearly tired. And it was probably a big shot and exhaustion mixed together, just not letting his body recover. But I was shocked at the result, kind of happy because I had him as my lock and definitely did not deserve to win it.
No. So, and we probably didn't really learn much either from that fight. It pretty much was what we expected from these guys.
I thought Espino looked good. I was really impressed with that little judo throw he had in there, which was pretty special. I think I'm no lower on Romanov as a prospect.
No.
Even having thought he might have lost that, because his thing is always, I'm a very dominant grappler with really good top game, and he went up against maybe a top five jiu-jitsu guy in that division right now, right? Like, it, right. As far as, like, big, heavy wrestler sub-grappling types, it's like Alexei Olenek is up there, and then these two. And, like, I mean, like, you could probably pencil a couple of other guys randomly into that top five, but as far as, like, somebody who's bad for Alexander Romanov's style, Espino was the worst stylistic matchup you could find for him outside of Alexei Olenek. And even then, I think his gas tank's better than Olenek's to an extent where he would probably beat Olenek pretty easily. So, yeah, I don't think we learned too much, but it was fun while it lasted, I guess.
Yeah, the one thing we did learn is Dan cares about hashtag chunky guys, but he claims he doesn't care about their groin and what goes on inside their cups.
So. I don't care about that part of the chunky guys.
All right. How about Romanov and Arlovski? They both fought in the same card.
I really hate that. I know you'd hate it, but
that's the type of – he's the type of guy they've been feeding Arlovski.
God, that is the type of guy they've been feeding Arlovski, and I hate it so much.
And the timing is going to work out?
The timing would work out. The one thing I would say is they don't seem to throw a lot of wrestler types at Arlovski.
No, right? It's true.
Like, you know, Tanner Boser, Felipe Lins, you know, he's just getting beaten. Chase Sherman. Like, it seems like they're willing to let him fight guys who are going to box him. And even Tom Aspinall did wrestle him and did rear naked choke him, but it was out of nowhere. Nobody saw that coming, right? So, like, they do seem to be matching him up with guys who will just, you know, like Parker Porter types, guys who will slug with him, right? Or try to slug with him and then get outpointed. So, like, you're right. It is that he does have the profile as far as wins and, like, you know, being an up-and-comer and being mostly young for the division. But at the same time, stylistically, it's not really what they've been giving him. So I'll be interested to see whether or not that's on the docket for Arlovski soon. I hope not. I like both guys too much.
Yes, it sounds like you're hoping that this doesn't happen. So before we continue with Stop the Steal, let's tell you about our last sponsor, Riffer. Sports Gambling Podcast is now on Riffer. Riffer is your home to mini episodes and free picks from the SGPN crew. If you don't have time to listen to an entire episode, Riffer is the perfect quick fix. Make sure to subscribe to the SGPN page by going to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. So basically it's, what, short form clips of podcasts, right, Gumby?
3 minutes or less, yeah.
Okay.
And you can get a lot of really great picks from the SGPN crew there on spring college football, which is still a thing I'm having a tough time wrapping my head around.
Yeah.
That there's two college football seasons and they're somehow different and unique. But they give you really good picks on that and NBA stuff, so make sure to follow the SGPN crew.
There you go. Stop the Steal again. Lupi Godinez got beat by split decision Jessica Penne. Godinez should have won just based on those insane throws that she was doing, because I'd never seen anything like that in all the decades I've been watching fights. She was just tossing Penne around. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, I had a really tough time with this one being scored for Penne. Like, I've excused the judges' decisions here a couple of times, right? Like I said, I did have Pena, even though I didn't pick him. And, you know, I was fine with this, that one judge's scorecards calling it for Justine Kish. I have a big problem with this going for Penne, because, you know, I did give her the first round. She wound up with Godinez's back. But that second round, I mean, every judge gave it to Penne, right? Every judge gave her the second round. And she literally got slammed like three or four times. She was in bottom control for a large portion of it. She did not look good with her hands. She was getting tagged. You know, like every single punch with any significance that landed seemed to be Godinez. And then Godinez obviously won the third. So I think, like, looking back at that, man, I'm having a tough time figuring out how Penne wins that. And I know, like, you know, like the back take attempts are interesting, right? Like she'd get in that clinch and she'd try to take the back by just like throwing her legs around Godinez, but then she just wound up in like a standing guard, and then Godinez would toss her off, not chase her down. I mean, she tagged her once and dropped her, and then like didn't chase her to the ground. She'd pick up her legs and dump her, and then not chase her to the ground. Like I thought Godinez, you know, controlled a lot of that fight, and I don't know, it was real weird for me to see it go for Penne. I think the other thing, for even the couple of media members who did score it for Penne, I think the commentary on this was just atrocious. You know, I don't usually call out Bisping for sounding, you know, bias in one way. I do usually call out Dominic Cruz because he is usually pretty terribly slanted one way or the other. But both of them seem to be talking not just that, like, Penne was winning, which, like, if you wanted to talk about Penne being winning, you're right. It was a close fight. Like, you could score it one way or the other. I thought it was pretty clear. But they were talking about it like Penne was dominating. You know, like, the whole commentary from Dominic Cruz was like, man, Penne looks great out there as she takes a right hand to the face. And you're like, does she? And I know it's because Cruz used to train at the same gym as her, or maybe still does. She, like, ran over and hugged him after the fight. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But, like, yeah, the commentary was bad. I think the judges' scorecards were bad. Ultimately, it's not a big deal for Godinez. It's only her sixth professional fight. It's probably good for Penne to get back on the winning track because, you know, having not fought in 5 years or something like that, she lost there. She was probably, man, four in a row and no wins in the last 6 years, probably due to be cut. So I guess it's good for her there, but yeah, I don't see that one at all.
No, Godinez looked, she came into this looking the best, obviously.
Yeah.
Despite losing, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of Loopy for sure. That goddamn Bartosz Fabinski did the one thing he had to avoid doing for me to win this pick, and he got himself guillotined. Like, it was pretty simple thing not to do. Get your head trapped by Gerald Meerschaert, and it was exactly how you envisioned how it would happen. You know, on the feet, tries to take him down and gets caught in a guillotine. That goddamn Bartosz Fabinski.
Yeah, I thought Fabinski did everything. Like I said, he was going to be better on the feet. His style inevitably would lead him to a clinch where he would also be better. And then for some inexplicable reason, he was going to try to take him down and do so sloppily. And that's it. Like, and probably some of it is that Fabinski has gotten away with that in the past, right? Like, Fabinski is on a whole bunch of leaderboards for, like, top control time and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, it's somewhat because he could do it to Hector Urbina and Emil Weber Meek, who, like, has some of the worst takedown defense and get up out of anybody in the division, or Gareth McLennan, who's, like, that South African guy who just was atrocious in grappling. He did it to Darren Stewart, and, like, yeah, you can get away with it to all those guys whose submission offense is not great. But he got guillotined by Michel Prezeris, who is, you know, got the same kind of sub game as Gerald Meerschaert. He got armbarred by Andre Muniz once he took him down because he was sloppy. And hey, he got sloppy again. So I think you're going to, if, I mean, you know, at this point, Fabinski has lost, what is that, 3 out of 4 he's lost now? All by submission?
Yeah, I think so.
And like, at this point in time, if he is going to get another one, like, that's the game plan's out on him. You know, like, just, he's sloppy when he takes you down. Sub him then. And like, unless he does something pretty drastically different, I think you're going to keep seeing the same kind of results.
Yep, it's true. Newcomer Dakota Bush was game against Austin Hubbard, but lost. But he looked pretty good for making his debut and on short notice. But damn him for losing, because we lost a +150 bet there.
Yeah, and I think full camp Dakota Bush beats Austin Hubbard. I'm just going to go on record saying that because he was very tired at the end of this fight. Very tired. And you got to imagine, you know, you could say octagon jitters or whatever, but he's a very strong guy for the division. It's probably a very strong guy in the division losing that amount of weight in 7 days. And he made weight. Props to him for making weight. But you got to imagine that took a lot out of him. He also came out throwing haymakers, so for him to be tired towards the end of a fight with Austin Hubbard and wind up losing late makes total sense. But I'm not lower on Dakota Bush, and I think given a full camp, he's going to look a lot better.
There you go. Plus, you got to like a guy with the nickname Harry. So
he didn't have that announced, though. I was real bummed that he didn't make Bruce Buffer say Harry Bush.
That would have been fun.
On the telecast. But yeah. Sort of a bummer, but yeah, I get why.
Yes, exactly. But this podcast, we pull no punches here. So sorry, Mom, we will say that. So yeah, Meerschaert won the bonus for the fight we just spoke of. And then the other bonus winner for performance of the night was the curtain jerker, Tony Gravely, starch Anthony Berchek in the second round. I don't know if there's really much to say about this fight. Do you have any great insight into this fight, or are we just going to let it go?
We can mostly let it go. I will say for the first time, I don't really care about the performance of the night bonuses since they both went to the only people who got finishes.
It's true.
I'll say this. Tony Gravely, typically seen as a guy who wrestles and subs people, throwing a big, mean left hand, is kind of fun. Good for him. He's got some boxing there in there, and he knocked out a guy who seemed to want to box him.
There you go. So that puts to bed that event. We're just going to move on. Forget about that. Because this coming weekend, we have the massive card. I was calling it UFC 261 Super Spreader event. But the numbers aren't so bad in Jacksonville. So hopefully it'll be a safe event in Jacksonville with 15,000 people. I think the new, actually, I see here the new name for it is UFC 261 Better Dead Than Red.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm not going to touch that.
AKA UFC 261 Die, Commie, Die. AKA UFC 261 USA versus the World. Yeah, it's. Rose Namajunas took a very interesting turn in the lead up to this fight. And guess she's Rocky and Zhang Weili is going to be Drago, apparently, this coming weekend.
It's just such a weird move to. And you know, you can say what you want about her heritage. And, she was saying that, I'm pretty sure, to a Lithuanian radio station, right? An English broadcast of a Lithuanian radio station. She did double down on the comments. So you can't walk it back after that. But. It's so wild to me that, like, you have a fight for the title, right? You're fighting Weili Zhang for your chance to become the first ever two-time women's strawweight champion, to not only get your belt back, but to get it back against somebody who they're now talking about being the greatest strawweight of all time, when you won it against the previous greatest strawweight of all time, which would pretty much cement you as, get this, the greatest strawweight of all time.
MMA math.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, not just MMA math, but, like, you beat the two other GOATs in the division. Like, you're it, right? Like,
yes.
I mean, like, I'm saying that right now with Volkanovski. Volkanovski's got two wins over Max Holloway and one over Jose Aldo. It's getting hard to deny him that status at this point. A couple more wins would really do it. But Rose Namajunas has those couple other wins, right? She also beat Jessica Andrade, who was a champ. She pretty much beat, with the exception of Carla Esparza, every single women's strawweight champion in history. She's up there as one of the greats if she beats Weili Zhang. So it's so wild to me that, like, the answer to that question already kind of in bad taste, but it's wild to me that you need anything else to help you get up for this fight. Right? Like, the meaning in this fight is incredible, right? Like, it cements your legacy as one of the greats in your weight class, one of the greats in women's MMA, one of the greats in MMA, period. And, like, you need something to get you mentally up for the fight, so you, like, espouse political beliefs into the head of your opponent. Like, that's a wild move, man. And like, it's also not like, it's not even like Weili Zhang is, like, posing with, like, the government officials from China. It's not even like the stuff you see with Russian fighters in Kadyrov, right? From Chechnya. Like, she's not even doing that. And even if she was, you'd have to ask, like, well, I mean, like, how do you say no to the person who's the dictator of your country? But, like, she's not even doing that. So, like, man, it's just such a weird move to get yourself up for a fight that way.
Yeah, I don't even know. The scary thing, I don't even know if this is a tactic to get up for the fight. It's very strange. Yeah, for those who don't know, she basically is running down Zhang Weili because she's from China, and that means she's a communist. So,
but she did also say that she'd like to be friends with Weili Zhang after that.
It's
like,
true.
You're right. I don't know necessarily that it's a shtick to get up for the fight, but, like, if you want to be friends with her, but you're also saying she's, like, an angry communist that you want to kill, then what's going on here? How do you want both of those things?
Yeah, well, it's basically since Rose is from the States, it's like saying she was a Trump Republican up until January, and now she's a Democrat. It's the exact same thing.
I would say,
it makes
too,
no sense.
I would say, too, this, and I don't want to throw a political stance on UFC 261, but I don't know if you've noticed, and this is probably, you know, we're kind of getting ahead of this, and I'm sort of a little bit worried about what a full crowd in Jacksonville, Florida, looks like with not just Weili Zhang on the card, right? After these types of comments and sort of the anti-Asian sentiment coming through, based on, you know, whatever it's based on, the coronavirus, all kinds of other stuff going on. But there are also a lot of Asian fighters on this card.
Yes,
including
there is, yes.
Quite a few from directly from China, right? Like, yep. So, I mean, like, that is certainly a thought that has crossed my mind going into this one. So that's a sort of like the unfortunate storyline going into UFC 261, in addition to, you know, having a full crowd during a pandemic.
Yeah, and there'll be plenty of Florida men there. They won't have masks in their way, yelling slurs at the damn commies, I'm sure. So Dana White will love it, though, I'm sure, and so will Jorge Masvidal, because he thinks he knows about politics too.
They're probably going to be pretty bummed when Jorge Masvidal gets 50-43'd again.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Not to spoil our preview episode.
Exactly.
But that's a fight nobody wanted to see a rematch of.
I know, but it works for they're calling it the biggest fight ever, and, you know, all the usual stupid sound bites. So we'll break that down next week. I think were is actually the word I'm looking for here, Dan, because there's more than one. There were some title fights announced this past week since we recorded also. Manda Nunes will be going back to bantamweight to, probably for keeps, you'd think, to defend against Juliana Pena. It's basically right time, right place for Pena. For this fight, I don't think she's the top contender in the division or anything like that. Have you seen the line yet, Dan, or are we going to play our game there?
So we can play our game. I will say two things first about your lead up to this. I don't think it's for good that she's going back to bantamweight. They will find some other featherweight that can win one fight and get a title shot.
Sure.
Maybe Danielle Wolfe will do precisely that for them, and then they'll give her that fight. And also, you're 100% right. Is not the best contender. She got tapped out by a kickboxer in her second-to-last fight. And I think put out. Was she put out cold? She's not the best contender for this. She's not the best contender for this fight. And as far as the third point, let's play our game. I'm going to line Amanda Nunes at negative. Damn, it's Amanda Nunes. She could be anywhere. Let's say negative 650.
Yeah, no, she opened at minus 400, which was a joke, if you ask me. It's gone up now, though, to minus 800, minus 700. So
yeah,
a lot of wise people got in on the minus 400 line because
they were like, that's got to be a mistake. They'll probably voice this
no
after
reason.
I put it down.
Yeah, there's no reason for it to be that low. So even minus 800 is, I guess that's probably the right range. But
I would say that is probably the right range. Like 650 to 800 is probably the right range. And I would say if you're interested in getting in on that because you're one of those super high volume bettors, not like either of us like numbers like negative 800, but if you want to dump a bunch of cash to win a few pennies, feel free to do that now, because in a couple of weeks I'm sure she will be negative 1200.
Yep, because we've seen it was announced a couple of days ago, and it's already doubled basically. It's gone from minus 400 to minus 800. So this will be taking place UFC 265, August the 7th. And then Jan Błachowicz's next fight at light heavyweight for the title has been announced against Glover Teixeira, who will be making his second kick at the can. He was one of the men who was one of John Jones's victims way back. Do you remember what year that was, or am I putting you on the spot here? Because I can't remember.
Let's see. I would say that was probably 2010.
It was still when he was undefeated, right? Sher was still undefeated, I think, at that point.
I think so. That's right after he knocked out Rashad Evans, right?
Yeah.
Because he knocked Rashad Evans out, like, hard. But I want to say it was like, I'm going to guess 2010.
Okay. Did you look it up, or are you making me look it up?
Oh, he wasn't even in the UFC in 2010. That's a terrible bet.
No.
It was 2014. Right. It was 2014.
That was a long time ago. So it's very, this is very rare that you're going to see a guy get a title shot 7 years later. But second title shot, I mean. But it's in this case, he's definitely the worthy contender here. Do you want to play our game again with the lines here, or do you know the lines in this one?
I don't know the lines in this one, but I'll give Jan Blankovic -250 because he'll be riding a little high after the Israel Adesanya win. I think he probably should be a little closer to even money than that, but like a deserved favorite, buoyed a little bit by the Adesanya win.
Yep, you're right in there. He opened at -190, and now it's gone to anywhere between -260 and -189. So there's quite a range there. But yeah, I think the higher end is where it should be. But yeah, so that will be taking place. Well, that's the event before.
That's in September.
Oh, really? It's after.
That's in September. Two, yeah. And okay. Let me just tell you something. We are right now in April. Booking a fight for September is a wild move in this era.
We are in April, everyone. Dan, that's why I have Dan on the podcast here. He brings
I let you know what month it is.
What month it is. We are in April. But yeah, they're really getting their ducks in a row here. I guess maybe because they want to – well, they already have started. They want to start taking the show on the road, and maybe they think they can sell out better if they have some fights in place. So, hey, fine with me. Get these fights lined up. And a lot of these cards will probably have multiple title fights on it because that seems to be the case nowadays. So I think that was it for the big title fights, and we don't know who Jake Paul's fighting next, so we can't break that down at this point, even though we would love to. So so that, I think, do you have anything else to talk about this weekend other than we suck again with our picks? I think that's pretty much all. I mean, I think we covered all we need.
We don't suck again with our picks.
Mediocre.
We are mediocre again. We didn't, you know, like we went from being atrocious to mediocre to joking about being mediocre to on a hot streak. So just a quick blip back on the radar, and I will say, you know, we're a couple of split decisions away from saying, you know, this is a 7-3 card for me and a 6-4 for you. So, you know, like we were pretty close on some of these, and I think, you know, like I said, full camp Dakota Bush gives us a win. You know, just getting the judges' scorecards right on the Lupi Godinez fight gets us a win, and you know, like then I'm talking about 7-3. So, yeah, like. But then again, we were gifted one, so, you know.
That's true.
The Fine. Even flows of MMA picking.
Sure. Stop the steal. Just remember that, everyone. This was quite a political episode, that's for sure.
And we talked about communism. Exactly. We started famous hashtags. Like, yeah.
Yes.
You know, this is a big episode for us.
Yeah, next, and it's only going to get better next episode, because next episode we'll probably dive into McCarthyism, don't you think?
I think that's the only thing we can do.
Exactly. All right, so that next episode will be midweek, or actually probably Thursday by the time it hits your ear holes. That will be us breaking down triple title fight UFC 261. Until that time, make sure you follow us both on Twitter. I'm Jeff Fox Writer. He's Gumby Vreeland. And make sure you read all our stuff on sportsgamblingpodcast.com and on MMA-manifesto.com. I'll be having the pick'em contests for UFC 261 will be posted early on Monday. More than likely it'll be early Monday or afternoon Monday. I guess until that time, Dan will take us home again, because Dan has catchphrases, and I like putting him on. See, I tried to put you on the spot last week, and you just went into like robot Dan mode, and you just did your
I got my robot sign up.
you went with your catchphrase from your other show. I was just hoping to put you on, make you thinking that we had set something up here, and you had a new catchphrase, but no, you just went into I am Daniel Gumby Vreeland, and
that's I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Right? He is Arctic Jack Fox, and we will catch you next week.
See, he did it again. All right, bye.